A new report says President Trump abused his office for personal gain. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead on the show, the impeachment investigation, where it goes from here, and how it's playing in Florida. What do you think? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, don't miss our live in-studio holiday performance from members of the Robert E. Lee High School Chorus. That's coming up later. But first this morning, a damning new report from the House Intelligence Committee. On Tuesday, that committee released the results of their investigation into President Trump. They say the evidence shows Trump placed his political interests above the national interest in his conduct toward Ukraine. Where does this go from here, and how is this likely to impact the vote later this year here in Florida? Daniel Cronrath is studying that. He's professor of political science at FSCJ, and he's on the line. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. How are you digesting the impeachment news coming out of Washington? What are your thoughts and comments? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. All right, let's begin with the executive summary of this report, Daniel, for those that don't want to read the whole thing. In a nutshell, the House Intelligence Committee says that the president subverted U.S. foreign policy toward Ukraine and undermined national security in favor of two politically motivated investigations he believed would help his reelection campaign. And so it is likely, I think, that the House Judiciary Committee from this will draw up articles of impeachment. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Melissa, I think what we're going to be seeing this week as the week moves forward and as we move on to the Intelligence Committee, which was the fact-finding phase of this impeachment proceeding, and we move to the judiciary phase, which is going to be trying to shape what articles of impeachment may look like. I think it's going to become even more partisan than what we've already seen, which for a lot of folks will be unfortunate. And I think we'll also have the effect of even turning more Americans who may have been paying attention off to the process. The one thing, you know, last week when we were watching the Intelligence Committee, yes, there was some partisan rancor and there were some sharp words. But I think this is where you're really going to see it get ratcheted up. You know, with this, not only are you going to have the return of Jim Jordan on the Republican side, Florida's Matt Gaetz, if you'll recall, Melissa, who led the march down to the SCIF to try to get into where the depositions were taking place, is on the Intelligence Committee. On the other side, you're going to have Representative Steve Kellen from Tennessee, the Democrat, when William Barr, our Attorney General, was brought before the House Judiciary Committee, was the guy who brought in the fried chicken because William Barr would not come to testify. So I think you're going to be getting some personalities in Congress who are going to be theatrical, which for political insiders and for people who have followed this extremely closely may make for high drama and good theater. However, sadly, considering how important this is, considering that we've only gone down this road this far with four U.S. presidents, I think it's going to have the effect of turning people off even further than they've already been turned off.
And so let's talk about what that means here in Florida, Daniel. A new poll out this week from St. Leo University Polling Institute shows 51.4% of Florida voters disapprove of the president's job performance. So just over half the voters in this state do not approve of President Trump. He won here in 2016, beating former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in the Sunshine State by less than 2 percentage points. How does the impeachment process play in Florida by the time we have the election in November?
I think what I've seen, Melissa, whether it's the most recent Florida poll from St. Leo that you referenced or the good work which is done over at UNF, or even the national polls, there seems to be a prevailing theme with a little bit of fluctuation, usually within the margin for errors of those polls, that if you voted for this president or you like this president, impeachment and what's taking place isn't having a major impact on how you feel about the job he's doing. If you don't like this president, if you were somebody who is not a supporter, then you favor impeachment. Again, I know this has been something which has been covered on your show at length for your audience, and it just really feels like impeachment right now has really just become kind of a partisan team sport. If you're sitting there and you're a Republican and you're being presented, you know, for example, the report which came out from Ranking Member Nunez, the Republican Minority Report, which paralleled the report which came out from Chairman Schiff, basically not even arguing the facts as they were presented in the Intelligence Committee, just looking at the exact same evidence and saying, yeah, we don't see anything impeachable with this evidence. It's a very, very it's a highly partisan time. Reminds me a little bit of the 1990s in terms of the Clinton impeachment. However, I think that it's really interesting. This was kind of a foreshadowing when the Trump administration first began. And of course, Kellyanne Conway, the president's spokesman, went on TV and you know, used that term alternative facts. You know, we're looking at a time right now, depending upon what side you are, we're looking at the same data and interpreting it completely differently. The same evidence, same data. And it's really either ignoring it or in some cases, I think, you know, really trying to convince yourself to ignore it, depending upon what where you're at on the political spectrum.
Setting that aside, let's talk about the merits of this investigation. As you pointed out, the House Intelligence Committee engaged in a fact-finding process. Let's talk mm-hmm. about what are the known facts. Under the facts that are presented here, these are impeachable offenses according to our Constitution.
Oh, I would. Well, first of all, I mean, again, to reiterate, impeachment is not a legal proceeding. It is a political
proceeding.
It is a political proceeding. That's correct. Some folks will like to make parallels between how the House actually conducts the evidence gathering and then really impeachment being parallel to the issuing of an indictment. And then the Senate, of course, conducting the trial. But those are really kind of where the parallels end, because, you know, the term, and it's really interesting because today's Judiciary Committee hearing, they're going to be bringing in constitutional law experts, which of course has the inner political geek in me excited, talking about what the framers would have really believed in terms of what was an impeachable offense. What did they mean when they said high crimes and misdemeanors? What was the prevailing wisdom of the day when the Constitution was drafted? Going back through centuries of English common law and how the English conducted the system and what it meant to be impeached. And I think one of the things you're going to see is that somebody does not have to violate the law to be impeached. You know, you can simply break that public trust, as Madison talked about in the Federalist Papers, to qualify for impeachment. So there again, that lends itself and just opens up an extremely partisan lens that you can view this entire proceeding through. So it's going to be very, very interesting to watch this take place. And I just don't feel like at the end of this week, Melissa, I don't think that we're going to have any more clarity into what the future of a potential impeachment trial is going to be. I think you're going to see us on the same track. I think you're going to see the House of Representatives dead set on impeaching the president because of a preponderance of evidence. And then I think that we're going to move over to the Senate and things will go as we anticipate. I think you're going to see partisan gridlock. And of course, that is a body in which the Republicans control. Very interesting. The other thing that's going to be interesting to see take place, because it's so unique in our political process, is actually watching the sitting Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice John Roberts, come and conduct a trial, which Mitch McConnell says he will hold. He is recognizing it's his constitutional duty to hold. I bring this up as being interesting because while it would seem to be a logical step that they would conduct that trial, remember, we don't have a Supreme Court Justice Merrick Garland right now. This is the same Mitch McConnell who refused to move to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia because he wanted to wait for an election. Okay, so the very fact that Mitch McConnell is going to be having a trial, and by the way, we don't know what shape that trial will take. But anyway, I don't think anything this week is going to necessarily change the trajectory that we've been on for the last several months.
Okay, all of that said, there are a number of shoes yet to drop. Several cases, Daniel, working their way through the appeals process are destined for the Supreme Court. In particular, House Democrats are seeking loan documents and financial documents from President Trump's accounting firm, Mazars, and from his primary bank, Deutsche Bank. The consensus has coalesced around the thought that the Democrats will be attempting to show that the president engaged in money laundering with Russia and perhaps other countries. Although there's no documents to produce as yet. Given that there are more tentacles to this investigation yet to unfold, could that change the calculus? Or do you see the partisan nature of this frozen in place over the next 6-8 months before the election?
I think that what we can see, and we will have to take the speaker at her word, is they are going to be moving on a very, very narrow impeachment basis. And it's going to be related to the president's actions in Ukraine. You mentioned the president's finances. We could also talk about what I believe to be his, when he leaves office, his pending indictment in the Southern District of New York for campaign finance laws violation for his payoffs, which his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, is now in jail for. You know, there's a variety of things that this president could potentially be indicted for once he leaves office. And I think you also see a split in the Democratic ranks on this issue. There are some Democrats who believe, since we're going down the road of impeachment, throw the kitchen sink at the president. Let's take the findings of the Mueller report, where the president clearly 10 times obstructed justice, not for the underlying crime, but just his readiness and willingness and activities in blocking that investigation. Some Democrats will argue, throw it all on the table. Let's have it out. I don't think that you're going to see that happen, though. I think that this is a clean, clear cut. The evidence is present now. Remember, one of the reasons why the Democrats say that they're rushing this process is because we have an election coming up next year.
Speaking of which, we had a prominent Democrat drop out of the campaign yesterday, Senator Kamala Harris.
Yes.
And so as that field of Democrats continues to narrow, what are your thoughts about pundits who've looked at the Democratic field and haven't seen a candidate they think might emerge as the most potential opponent to the president?
Yeah, you know, Senator Harris, of course, entered the race with a lot of fanfare. She had a massive rally in Oakland, California when she got into the race. Her fundraising was brisk. Anyone who's had an opportunity to hear Senator Harris can understand why she was such a successful attorney general in California. She has the temperament and the skills of an expert prosecutor. However, as the campaign waned and she got hit with some tough issues, as her money started to dry up, her campaign started to lose momentum. In terms of where the race shakes out now, I think you're eventually going to have, I feel like at the next summer when you get to the Democratic convention, we're still going to be on a path that basically having a center of the party versus a left of the party conflict, where there will amount to be one progressive will emerge in this race, probably Senator Sanders from Vermont. And then you're going to have somebody who's occupying the central lane. And because of how the Democrats do their primary process with proportional allocation of delegates, I think you're going to see Senator Sanders, even if he doesn't have the majority of the delegates, he's going to be going to the convention with a whole bunch of delegates because, quite frankly, there's no reason for him to get out of the race. He has a lot of money. He has a lot of grassroots support. He's outraising people with the quarterly reports without taking a dime of corporate PAC money. So what's that's going to happen? The divide with the Democratic Party is that you're going to end up having a centrist candidate, whether it be Mayor Pete Buttigieg, whether it be former Vice President Joe Biden. You're going to have kind of these two factions of the same party collide at the convention. Senator Harris, in terms of her contribution to that, you know, some have speculated she made a backroom deal, perhaps with Joe Biden. Who knows? We'll find that out in time.
Okay, let's go to some calls now for FSCJ's Daniel Cronrath, 549-2937. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I have a hypothetical question, but there's a reason I have this. For a moment, imagine Joe Biden is not running for president. If Donald Trump had, for lack of a better word, made the request to investigate Biden and his son's relationship with Ukraine and all that kind of stuff, would we be having this impeachment type discussion right now? And if the answer is no, we would not be having this discussion, then the takeaway to me seems that the reason we are is because Joe Biden is running for a political office. And if that's the case, then does that mean that if you're running for a political office, you're beyond a reproach for some type of investigation on potential wrongdoings?
All right, Mark, thanks for that call. Daniel, let's talk about that, because what's being alleged is that the president insisted that the president of Ukraine give the appearance of seeming to investigate the Bidens. The ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, told the House committee that he didn't have to actually do the investigation. He only needed to be seen as investigating Biden, theoretically to damage Biden's candidacy. But what about Mark's other point? What's good for the goose is good for the gander, in other words, is what you hear some Republicans saying about this whole matter, saying that if the president is being investigated, that the Bidens should also be investigated. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, my first take would be is that the Bidens have already been investigated. That entire process has been looked at. It's been examined. While some of us may consider that to be unethical, others may, label that as being the privilege of our current oligarchy that we have in the U.S. There was nothing illegal that was done by Joe Biden's son, no matter how smelly it may be to some. There was nothing illegal about that activity. Relative to the investigating of somebody who's just running for office, to Mark's point, I think the big difference here is that you're talking about the person who is basically ordering or requesting the investigation of the Bidens being the direct opponent, potentially, of that individual running for office. This isn't just somebody who's running for office. And I think you made a great point there, Melissa, because I think when you look back at the history of President Trump, if you're somebody who looks at his activities and sees them as being really calculated to advance his own political agenda, the entire concept of when Gordon Sumlin testified and he said, listen, we weren't even necessarily interested in the investigation. We were only interested in the announcement of the investigation. That's critical in a way, because it's basically saying is what we want is we want the public relations hit. We're not really interested in finding out if corruption existed. All we want is the hit. We want the political gains of being able to imply that Joe Biden was somehow and his son were doing something nefarious.
Okay, Daniel, I'm going to read a few tweets and emails to you, and they are reflective of the divide you just talked about in this country. Here's a tweet from a listener. This should be about upholding law and order, not changing the trajectory or polling or scoring points. The GOP used to tout themselves as the party of law and order. What happened to that party? But here's another tweet from Rob. These impeachment hearings are a joke. The Dems need to focus on productive issues facing the U.S. All right. And then here are a few more emails for you. Andrew emails us and says, as a businessman, President Trump's entire career was constructed upon fraud and the con job. It's how he managed his real estate dealings, his casinos. And when called on his deceptions, he tied everything up in endless court hearings. This is all he knows. And he is clearly trying to run the presidency the same way. All right. So that's a sampling of feedback we're getting. And, you know, it's not surprising here in this swing state, we hear from a divided audience on this. We hear from a listener saying, look, this is a joke. Get back to productive issues. Other listeners say, no, there is nothing more important than holding someone accountable who abused their office for personal gain. There's the divide right there.
And if you were to ask Speaker Pelosi this, or anybody who's in the Democratic House right now, they would tell you that they have been walking and chewing gum at the same time. They have passed legislation to increase the minimum wage in the United States. They have been negotiating with the administration, despite the fact that there's not media work on this, media reporting on this, on a new trade agreement with Mexico and with Canada. So I think one of the things is because we tend to, at the national level, Melissa, even more and more, we tend to examine one issue. We become solely focused on it, and legitimately, when it's an impeachment of a president of the United States. However, I think to imply that there's been business which has not been done by the House of Representatives, I think is kind of misplaced. There are a pile of bills right now which are waiting for Mitch McConnell in the Senate to take action on, to bring to a Senate vote, which has not been done. And by the way, this isn't necessarily just a Republican thing. We can go back to the last 20 or 30 years of American history, and when we've had a divided government, all kinds of legislation has piled up waiting for the other chamber to do something with that legislation, because simply the politics doesn't favor bringing it to a vote on the floor.
Right. And, you know, I'm so glad you pointed that out, that there is a lot of news happening beyond this impeachment inquiry. If you turn on cable news at night, any of those channels, any of the three major channels, you're not going to hear about other news. You're not going to hear about international news. All you're going to get is the impeachment show night after night after night after night. And honestly, I think that has resulted in a lot of Americans tuning this out.
Well, Melissa, I think this is why so many people who live in the First Coast value programming like yours. I think if you turn on Fox News, or if you were to turn on MSNBC or turn on CNN, you're going to find one point of coverage, Trump. Now, you're depending upon what you believe in Trump, you may turn on MSNBC to have your feelings reinforced. You may turn on Fox to have your feelings reinforced. However, the fact that we have a corporate, even though we have the freest media in the world, we have a corporate media structure which is built on ratings. And the fact of the matter is that this president of the United States knows how to sell. And he's popular. Obviously, the advertisers like this. And it's TV media coverage, okay? I hate to say this. This goes back to my time in undergraduate school, but it's what we used to call lazy media. It's a lot easier to cover the low-hanging fruit than what it actually is to dive in and present people with strong policy issues. And by the way, I mean, this is a point. There are programs out there that you can turn to if you want to see what's actually happening on a broader scale. PBS NewsHour remaining, in my mind, one of the best coverage, the best programs.
I couldn't agree more. Judy Woodruff is my hero. It's a great show, and it covers the waterfront. They cover everything. 1 hour of your time each night is, and it's the best, I think, the best news program on TV. Yes.
It's often not glamorous. It's often not sexy. But if you're really interested in finding out and getting a recap of what's going on in America in 1 hour, I can't imagine a better program.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for plugging that and our radio site here as well. He's Daniel Cronrath of FSCJ. Always good to have you. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And we do cover a lot of news on this show and on 89.9. A quick break, and up next, medical and mental health services for kids here in Jacksonville. Get a shot in the arm. We'll tell you how after this.
WJCT as we celebrate 20 years of America's Test Kitchen. To mark this occasion, WJCT is hosting an America's Test Kitchen recipe contest on Instagram. Calling all cooks, chefs, and foodies, pick your favorite America's Test Kitchen recipe, cook it, capture a pic of your dish, and share it to your Instagram page using hashtag WJCTTestKitchen. Visit WJCT.org/testkitchen for more information.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's billed as a big win for kids here on the First Coast. Jacksonville's main agency for children, the Kids Hope Alliance, has received a $4 million grant to provide physical and behavioral health services for children in the area. This grant will be administered by a KHA partner, the Partnership for Child Health. We're getting details now as we welcome Vicki Wadowich. She leads the Partnership for Child Health, and Dr. Sarah Lynn Grass, Chief Programs Officer with the Kids Hope Alliance. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Grass, let's begin with you. First of all, kudos. Where is this grant coming from, and how will this money be used?
Sure. So this is a federal grant, and we've worked very close with Vicki and her team. You know, it's really going to be used to help children throughout Jacksonville to identify them early with if they have mental health needs, and to make sure that we increase the access to those mental health services and make sure that more children are served throughout the county. So we're just really excited to be working with Vicki and her team and partnering on this to make sure that we're really building this capacity throughout Jacksonville to serve the most kids that need it.
So, Vicki, the Partnership for Child Health will be in taking the lead on this. Tell me everything that's going to be happening and how you'll use this $4 million to help vulnerable kids here on the First Coast.
Well, first of all, thank you, Melissa, for having us on here. We really appreciate the opportunity to come share about the receipt of our award. And then also, you know, it gives us an opportunity to brag about our community and the strength of the collaboration between the medical, the academic, the government, and the nonprofit sectors, as this is a testament to that collaboration, because to receive a third iteration of this award is very rare. And so we're really excited about that. But this is building on the work of the first two grants since 2010 with our partner Kids Hope Alliance, well, JCC at the time. We have been providing services throughout Duval County with the System of Care grant. These grants are really designed as seed money to let communities pilot innovative ideas and be able to demonstrate that they are able to serve children, identify children with mental health issues, and then treat them. Now, one of the things that we'll be doing specifically is we're focusing on early identification, like Sarah Lynn said, but also we want to increase access to services, we want to increase the capacity of providers, and we want to reduce the barriers to care. And, you know, we know right now that 1 in 5 children live with diagnosable mental health disorders. In a classroom of 30, that is 6 children. And only 20% of children with mental health issues are identified, and that 50% of all lifetime illnesses develop by the age of 14. When we first wrote this, the first iteration of this grant in 2010, and this was actually conceptualized by Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, who has been the vision behind this, suicide was the third leading cause of death. Now, with this iteration of this grant, suicide is now the second leading cause of death. So, in youth, ages 10 to 24 years old. And so one of the things that we're going to be focusing on is expanding our collaborative care model. This is a partnership with the University of Florida. Dr. Elise Faluco has developed and implemented this. And this model really advances child mental health clinical mm-hmm. training and outpatient psychiatric consultation to physicians. Basically, we train physicians, or Dr. Faluco trains physicians, to be able to identify and suicide, depression, anxiety, mental health issues, and then manage and treat them within their practices. Based on the fact that suicide is now the second leading cause of death, this is really a game changer in our community. And just this far, she's already trained over 200 physicians in our community. We've had, since the grant started, over 36,000 children have been screened for suicide and depression. And one of the things that we know through her research is that 84% of children who are referred from their pediatrician actually follow up with mental health.
So that's where the referrals come from? Pediatricians? Are you working with schools as well to help identify kids that may be at risk?
Okay, well, the medical behavioral health home is a large component of this. What we are envisioning is, one, these pediatric practices will provide the physical and behavioral health integrated services, and that also these the practices themselves will manage these children, but children will come into those practices for their treatment, for their medical home. So children from the schools can be referred into these practices. Right now, we're working with very closely with Sulzbacher. The clinic at the Sulzbacher Village mm-hmm. is a practice that we've been working closely with to develop with therapeutic services. And the idea is that that practice right there becomes a hub for all of these other practices, and that we have psychiatric fellows out there who will see these children from these medical practices that potentially need consultation, but ultimately go back to the practices. We know that we have a shortage of psychiatrists in the community, and this is a way to increase that capacity.
Right. And, you know, you hear that a lot, Dr. Grass, that if you have a child with behavioral or mental health issues, it's very difficult to even find a practitioner who will treat them.
That's correct. And, you know, we also find, too, that for parents that might not really know what to do. They know that their child has is expressing a behavioral issue, that when they go to their pediatrician is the one that's actually referring them on to get those mental health services, that they're more, I guess, apt to listen than it would be if it was a social worker or a teacher, for example. So it's really important that we're working with these pediatricians to make sure that they're getting parents to get their children screened and to access these services, and also that we're trying to work with colleges, as Vicki mentioned, to really expand access to them and make sure that there's more people entering the field, and that when they enter the field, they're equipped to actually serve the children that need to be served.
This news is certainly very positive for the Kids Hope Alliance. Coming upon some negative news cycles, Dr. Grass, let me ask you about that. The current head of KHA, Joe Peppers, is on administrative leave. There's an inspector general investigation that's ongoing. Peppers has accused Mayor Curry and his team of pressuring him to commit procurement fraud by directing microgrants for children to certain preferred faith-based groups in this city. So how do you see KHA continuing to work on its mission of helping children in this area, given that your leadership is in flux right now?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. I would actually say that in regards to the Inspector General's investigation, you know, that is something totally separate than us. It's part of, even separate than the city. It's an independent agency that does that, so we're not involved with that. However, we have a very strong leader in place right now. We have an acting CEO, Mr. Donnie Horner III, who really is taking us on to the next level, you know, in spite of kind of what's been going on in the media. And I think that we also have very, very strong support from the mayor's office, the city council, and our board. And we just really can't thank all of our partners enough for rallying around us and helping us to strengthen us in our mission to serve kids. We really have not missed a beat in that area, and I think that you'll see us only to continue to get better in trying to work with our partners, with our community, and providing the best services that we possibly can to our children with the support of our city.
Okay, so Vicki Waitowicz, with all of that said, you're about to get to work on this. Is the money already in hand?
Yes, we're working on contracts right now and making sure that we get services out there and implemented as soon as possible. And just to touch on something that Sarah said about the solid foundation of the Kids Hope Alliance, our partnership with them has been starting with the Children's Commission until now, has been a very productive one. And we have a great reputation with SAMHSA, as is evident by getting another iteration of this grant. And we've been able to leverage these dollars to actually bring in other state funding to try and blend and braid to increase the services. And then, of course, one of the big components of this grant is also to provide high-fidelity wraparound. And that is an intensive care coordination model that just this past year has served almost 400 children with an 82% reduction in Baker Acts. So we are really looking forward to expanding these services, to increasing the access for children, and to really making a difference in the disparities that are happening.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for joining us. Vicki Waitowicz, she heads up the Partnership for Child Health. Dr. Sarah Lynn Grass with the Kids Hope Alliance. Keep us posted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And up next, how you can support a critical health need this holiday season by giving blood. We'll be right back.
WJCT's Oddball podcast is getting national buzz, like this shout out on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast.
What is making me happy this week is a new podcast that I discovered via NPR One. It is a podcast called Oddball.
That's Linda Holmes.
It's fun. It's entertaining.
Or maybe you use Apple Podcasts and saw Oddball featured first on the new and noteworthy list, or you saw it on Stitcher's What's Hot list. Check it out at oddballpodcast.com.
My mom was high ranking. She wasn't just a numbers runner. She was a banker. And she was the only woman in Detroit operating at that level.
Join us for more true stories told live. Next time, parental lessons, both purposeful and accidental. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's the season of giving. Here's an easy way you can help others in this community. You can give the gift of life with a simple blood donation. That's right. Blood donations often decline at the holidays. Unfortunately, that's just when hospitals and health agencies need blood the most. Karen Patterson is Community Development Coordinator with LifeSouth, and she's here now with more. Hey, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. So you always need blood donations, but I didn't realize at this time of year you especially do. Why do you see the donations drop off? Just the holidays have people too distracted?
Exactly. There's many contributing factors to the decrease in blood donations. Pretty much people are busy. They have a lot of travel going on. Unfortunately, the flu starts popping up in Jacksonville. And also the cold weather. Even though it's not as cold here in Jacksonville, the colder it gets, the more difficult it is to get people to donate at our donor centers and to actually visit our blood mobiles.
Trying to get them out to your centers, or if you see the blood mobile around town, you can stop in and donate there. Because hospitals have an increased demand at the holidays for blood. Why is that?
That's correct. And again, it's because the donations go down just because the travel time and things are so busy right now. And unfortunately, there's a lot of car accidents and things that happen around Jacksonville. We're a very large city. So unfortunately, the need does increase around the holidays.
Okay. It's easy to give blood and it only takes a few minutes. People sometimes don't want to do it because they're afraid of needles or whatever. They're worried about if the blood donation will affect their health. It won't. This is something that's so important to say. One blood donation can save up to 3 lives. I didn't know that. How does your pint of blood or however much they take save up to 3 lives?
Of course. That's a really great question. So when a person donates blood, we actually separate that blood into 3 different parts: your red blood cells, your platelets, and your plasma. So depending on what a patient needs, they'll get whichever part, and that way you can save 3 lives from just 1 blood donation.
Wow. So it takes about 10 minutes. Your blood mobile has come here to WJCT, and you've had a blood drive right here in our parking lot. And, you know, hey, you can't beat it because you always give us the little cookies after we donate, which is always nice and helps build your blood sugar back up. And, you know, you've done a little good. So how can people access LifeSouth at the holidays and take a few moments to donate blood?
Well, you can easily visit our website, lifesouth.org. You can also visit our donor centers. We have one at 7840 Bay Meadows Way. And we also have one downtown at Baptist, right across from the Bridges Cafe and across from the stairs to the Heart Hospital. So just take a moment. We'll give you a very brief physical. We'll do a mini wellness exam for you. We'll do a cholesterol screening. After the donation process, you'll know that you can go about your day and that you've saved 3 lives right here in our local community.
Now, with all of that said, Karen, there are some categories of people who are not allowed to give blood or who are advised not to try to donate blood. Can you bring us up to date on those groups?
Of course. Well, to donate blood, you need to be in reasonably good health. If you're currently not feeling well, if you're going through any kind of cancer treatment, it's not a good idea for you to donate. However, if you weigh at least 110 pounds, you have no health issues, most people are more than able to donate. But if you have any questions, you can always hop in our blood mobile. We have trained technicians that actually go through a whole physical with you. So we can take care of all that.
What about HIV patients and gay men? That's typically the groups that have gotten the most attention through the years. What are the rules around that?
Well, unfortunately, all blood banks are monitored by the FDA, and the FDA has a set rule, unfortunately, that if you are of an alternative lifestyle, especially if you're a homosexual male, you're not able to donate if you've had sexual contact for a year.
This applies to men only? not yes. women who are in same-sex relationships?
That is correct.
Okay. And so with that said, you know, in earlier years, particularly before the three-drug cocktail developed to treat HIV and AIDS, people were terrified about getting blood transfusions. They thought they could get the disease or some disease from tainted blood, you know, and there were some anecdotal reports of that happening some time ago, not recently. Can you explain how the blood supply is protected so that when someone needs a transfusion at the hospital, their blood, the blood they're getting doesn't carry any kind of disease?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a very thorough process where our blood gets tested. We have an internal and external lab where we test for several different diseases and several different pathogens in the blood. There used to be kind of a more of a increased risk of some contamination, but now our process, we're totally mandated by the FDA. Everything is very, very thorough, and the chance of actually getting a sexually transmitted disease or any kind of blood pathogen is very, very low now.
Okay. The other thing we need to point out is, in addition to encouraging people to make a donation, an individual donation, your business, your church, your community group, your school can host a blood drive. And how does that work? How can people make that happen?
Hosting a blood drive is just a fantastic way to give back this holiday season. There's no fee to host a blood drive like we did here at WJCT. We just bring our blood mobile out for a couple hours. We provide all the snacks, all the donor recognition items, all the information that you might need. So blood drives are just a wonderful way, even if you're not eligible to donate. The reason that most people donate is because nobody's ever asked them to. So take this as the request.
You're now being asked, First Coast. If no one's ever asked you to give blood before, well, now we're asking. So go to lifesouth.org and find the nearest blood donation center to you. Keep your eye out for the blood mobile. You see it all over town. As Karen said, it's red, white, and blue. And you can stop in if you see the blood mobile anywhere and just walk right in. Into the bus and donate. It takes about 10 minutes. It couldn't be easier or quicker. And as Karen has said just now, at the holidays, the donations really tend to trickle off when they need blood more than ever at this time of year, at this season. So take a few minutes to give in the way that you can. This is free and it won't cost you anything to do so. So Karen, thank you so much for joining us. Again, that website is lifesouth.org. She's Karen Patterson with LifeSouth. Give blood, everybody. There, we asked again.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you so much. And in a moment, don't miss our live in-studio performance. It's a preview of the holiday spirit up at Caddyshack Ranch. Yes, the Robert E. Lee High School Chorus is performing next. Keep listening.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington is proud to support the J.T. Townsend Foundation, helping families living with disabilities right here on the First Coast. Learn more at jtgivesback.org.
Clay Today reaches the heart of Clay County. Clay Today print and digital products promotes businesses while providing local news and current happenings in Clay County. Information at claytodayonline.com.
I'm Ira Flatow. When did you first get captivated by science? Astronaut Leland Melvin says his interest was sparked literally when his mother gave him a chemistry set.
You know, I created this explosion. I burned her carpet. She ran in the room and You know, I got a spanking, but my brain was activated to science.
Activate your brain to science on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Federal law says borrowers with significant disabilities can have their student loans erased. But a new NPR investigation finds the vast majority are not getting the help they deserve.
I just don't understand why the Department of Education continues to fail to make good on this opportunity to make a lasting difference in the lives of Americans who've already suffered.
Student debt and disability this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Every week we get a report called First-Time Claims for Unemployment Benefits. It sounds simple, but it's not.
It's really a measure of worker confidence in the economy. And a particularly salient one, because it's not just like, let me answer this survey question, but rather like, let's see what I'm doing with my time and energy.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, breaking down an indicator next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6, here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's own Caddyshack Ranch is getting into the holiday spirit this month with a slew of fun seasonal events. We've got a preview and a performance as we welcome Kurt Lojudis. He's executive director at Caddyshack Ranch. Hey, Kurt.
Melissa, thank you so much for having
us on.
Thanks
for being with us. Also here, AJ Neer. He is the chorus director at Robert E. Lee High School, and he's brought some members of the Lee Chorus with him. Hey, chorus. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Thanks so much, guys.
Hey, good morning. I am so excited because in a moment, the kids are going to sing. This is a preview of what you have going at the ranch, Kurt. And for people that have never been to the Caddyshack Ranch, it's an amazing wildlife sanctuary where you can see big cats.
It is. And it's cats up close. Great opportunity to get a little education and learn a little bit more about the animals. So what we're looking for is for visitors. And of course, what has made this all happen is the community involvement. It's groups, it's companies, Moe's. Thank you so much for helping. Jack's Illumination has been a big part of this first ever Caddy Claws Christmas. So we're getting ready to promote this and get it out there, and people are going to have a blast.
And this kicks off tonight at Caddyshack Ranch with a performance from the Robert E. Lee Chorus. Now, AJ, you're the choir director. People might remember you from your stint on American Idol. Very exciting. tell us about this choir.
This choir is built from the ground up. When I first got together to Lee High School in 2005, there wasn't a chorus there. And I've been there for approximately 15 years now, and now we have a choir of 140 members. Many of my students have gotten scholarships in music going along their way. Our goal is to try to bring community and outreach through music to our local community in the Riverside, Jacksonville area.
Okay, and so the choir will be singing tonight to kick off Caddy Claws Christmas at Caddyshack Ranch. People could come out and see the cats, right, Kurt?
That's correct.
And then listen to some holiday music.
It's going to be a wonderful atmosphere. See some beautiful lights from Jack's Illuminations that provided those lights for us. And, of course, our employees, our volunteers, teams of people putting things together to make it all happen.
And we're talking tigers, panthers.
Leopards, panthers, lions. And, of course, we have new residents. So their debut is through Christmas here. And, of course, we actually started holiday hours. 1 to 3 every day. It's amazing.
Okay, so you have all kinds of reasons to visit Caddyshack Ranch this season, including tonight, when, as I said, you'll get a special treat, a live performance from the Lee High School Chorus. AJ, you guys have prepared a selection for us. What are we going to listen to now?
We're going to hear a spiritual called Run, Mary, Run.
Here they are, the Robert E. Lee High School Chorus.
Run, Mary, run. Run, Mary, run, I say. Run, Mary, run. You've got a right to the tree of life. You've got a right to the tree of life. Run, 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 run. You've got a right to the tree of life. Run, 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 run. You've got a right to the tree of life.
Chorus. That was beautiful, kids. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Caddyshack Ranch as they kick off Caddy Claws Christmas. This is all through December. Open every day from 1 to 3 p.m. Night feedings Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. This Sunday, you can get your kid on Santa's lap with a free photo. And lots more fun stuff, Kurt. They just need to visit your website.
They do. Come on out and visit us. All kinds of things happening. Capital improvements happening, benefiting animals and visitors and employees. Hope everybody has a wonderful and healthy holiday, and they'll come out and enjoy it with us.
Absolutely. Go to Caddyshack, CattyShack.org, and visit the Caddyshack Ranch this holiday, beginning with the kickoff tonight. Thank you so much, choir and choir director A.J. Neer. Kurt LaJudas, he runs Caddyshack Ranch.
It runs me.
It runs you. I know that feeling. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs this program. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is digital editor. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and tune in tomorrow for a conversation with EWC President Zachary Faison. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. If you're listening tonight to our rebroadcast, just keep it right there for some great music, and we'll see you in the morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.